This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
What happens when a self-proclaimed goddess, who's already been convicted of murdering her children, decides she knows better than a trained attorney and steps into court to defend herself on a fresh murder charge? Well, you get Lori Vallow-Daybell, part-time prophet, full-time narcissist, and now playing the dual role of defendant and defense attorney in her Arizona murder trial. This week, we've watched Lori cross-examine her own family, confront women who simply dated her murdered husband, and twist reality in ways that make gaslighting look like a party trick. The delusion is strong, but the narcissism, this might just be Olympic level. Joining us today is psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott, who's here to help us unpack the deeper psychological mechanisms at play. Siobhan, let's just dive right in. What does it tell you about Lori Vallow-Daybell's mental framework that she genuinely believes she's the best person to defend herself in a murder trial? And what kind of narcissistic traits do we see unfolding in real time as she interrogates witnesses who are literally grieving her alleged victims?
Yeah, and grieving the children. I mean, grieving Charles, her husband, and, you know, there's so much that's odd in this case. But the term that comes to my mind, the first one, is grandiose. Mm-hmm. She's so incredibly grandiose that she thinks that she's the best person to do this. And she presents herself as, most of the time, confident. She thinks she's competent. Clearly, she's not competent. The judge, I think, has been very patient with her.
Yes.
But the grandiosity and her ability to distort reality is striking.
Yeah, it truly is. I give it to that judge. My gosh, like, he's got the patience of a saint. I'd almost say a little too much patience at times. I think at some point here, she keeps firing torpedoes at her own ship. The judge just needs to say, are you sure you want to light that next cannon? Because he has been doing that. I say, just let her light the cannons. Just let her light them.
Exactly. Yeah.
No more holding hands. We don't need to do that anymore. That is such a striking decision to represent herself. She insisted that she knew her case better than any attorney could. And she cited her right to a speedy trial as her reason, saying she didn't want to sit in a jail longer, and she just wanted to get this going, and she didn't want to waste any more time. But she has all the time in the world, but she wanted to get going towards it. I'm taking it's probably more than just time. It's that she really does think she can do a better job than anyone else. Do you think she's still thinking that now that we're this far into it?
You know, her ability to distort reality and filter things is astounding. And my guess is she probably thinks she's doing a great job. Mm-hmm. And it's I had made a list of the personality, the personality traits, which were narcissistic, histrionic, which means attention seeking, and a person just craves attention. So I think she's probably loving that aspect of it and probably gets a mood elevation from feeling like, hey, I'm being, you know, Perry Mason, and everybody in the courtroom is impressed with me now. And that's a distortion, but I think that's evidence of her illness.
I wonder what she's feeling back in the cell at night. It's like, nailed it. Nailed it.
Probably. She probably thinks she did a great job and everybody is now on her side.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. How do you think she's representing herself about people that she's alleged to have killed or attempted to kill. Her affect in court is not of one of grief at all. I mean, nor was it in the hours unfolding after the death. She went to Burger King, got some chicken fries, got some water, because do you know, if you're under stress, you're thirsty. That was her point the other day. So I went to Burger King, not because I wanted to feed my kid and I'm completely unaffected by this. It was, I got water because I was thirsty. These pretzels are making me thirsty, Jerry. It's insane. But her cheerful demeanor throughout all of this, never showing any sort of grief or anything for Charles. And again, it happened a while ago. You probably grieved. I don't think she's capable of grieving. But how is that playing to a jury, do you think? Just the utter coldness about, this is her husband. She's so curious about who he's dated and what if he's a good kisser and what he said on the dates.
That's when you get affect, right?
Yes,
you get the cattiness.
You get that, but you don't get like any grief that he's dead.
No.
I mean,
none at all.
What is that?
You know, he's, I guess, Ned, the demon-possessed zombie that needed to die. And that's what's in her head as the story that she believes.
True.
So she doesn't do grief.
Yeah.
And just as the kids and Tammy Daybell are all in heaven and doing great and happy and love her, I mean, her ability to be crazy, she's really good at crazy. You know, that's a gift that she has. She may not really be a goddess, but she's gifted in certain things.
Yeah, I would imagine so. How dangerous is it when you have something like this where it's narcissism and it's mixed with religious delusion?
It's very dangerous.
I mean, that seems to be able to reinforce the distorted reality. Even further, because to have one, you have to believe some things that are just magical. And then if you're already thinking magical over here, well, this is magical. I could be magical too. I mean, what are some ways where that can just really go off the rails and how far that can go to such extreme behaviors?
Yeah, it's the profile of a deadly, dangerous cult leader, Jim Jones or David Koresh, you know. Pre-existing personality traits that make them it dangerous in that way. But then if you throw a delusional disorder and paranoia and grandiosity on top of that, then you get somebody that can do just about anything, free of empathy, free of guilt, and they craft a story that justifies killing. Even when it's in the case of People's Temple, Jim Jones, killed their own people, killed themselves and killed you know, dozens and dozens of their followers. And so it's a very dangerous combination. I have no doubt that if this had not come to light because the kids were missing and the family was raising all the questions with law enforcement, other people would have died.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seemed if you had a life insurance policy and you spoke out against her or said anything that wasn't quite along the lines of what she wanted you to believe, her narrative, you were dead. It wasn't just you're out of the narcissistic circle. You're no longer a flying monkey. We're going to kill you.
Kill you.
And that seemed to be where it was certainly going. Let's talk for a moment, because I'm curious to get your thoughts on what that interaction was like with Nancy Jo Hancock the other day. She was the woman who went on a date with Charles Vallow the night before he died. And Lori's off the rails obsession that she went into asking, well, was he a good kisser? What were you talking about me the whole time? And I loved her comeback of don't flatter yourself, Lori. We weren't talking about you the whole time.
What
was your thoughts on that interaction from a psychological standpoint?
It was another reason she should not be her own attorney because, boy, she cannot contain herself. And so even though she was already screwing Chad Daybell, how dare Charles be on a dating site, a Mormon dating site, no less, and having dinner with a woman. It was catty. It was kind of classic, you know, personality disorder nonsense. And I have to say it made me raise my eyebrows and then it made me laugh. And I thought Nancy Jo's comeback was golden.
Yeah, I mean, it really, that's where she just kind of began going off the rails. I was at the very beginning when she did her opening statements, I was honestly a little surprised. The bar was already really low, but I was like, oh, okay. Maybe we're going to see a different side. Maybe we're going to see the manipulative side of Lori, the side of Lori that was able to get these. I mean, how many men? Was it 5, 6? I don't remember exactly how many husbands that she's had. The side of Lori that was able to reel those people in. And because at one point she was able to turn it on and really make people, I mean, or they were just looking at her going, I don't care what you're saying. Take off your clothes. You know, I mean, that I could see being a thing too. But at some point, several people sought enough in her to have children with her as well. So to for her to get up there is like, maybe we're actually going to see it. Do you think that her, is this something where she's deteriorated in that department? Has the extreme religiosity eaten away into that area of being to manipulate people, being able to manipulate people to such an extreme that now it's really obvious where she goes into crazy territory?
Yeah.
It's not such an easy task for her these days.
Yeah, I think she would have a hard time out in the dating world at this point. Even if she wasn't accused of, you know, multiple murders here and convicted, I think people would spot it pretty quickly. But she has at times, in some of the interviews and even in some of her early interactions in court, I think on day one, she has this almost coquettish manner. And this sort of young, I mean, she's not a young woman at this point. I don't remember her age exactly, but it sort of reminded me of a flirty teenage girl, the way she talks, and it may be just the way she talks to men. And so I think she had a shtick. And yeah, she is attractive, and the long blonde hair, and the, you know, she's thin and trim and sort of the Barbie look in that way. And it, I guess, doesn't surprise me that that's power for her. That's how she seduces people, and probably has the ability to put on a very charming persona when it suited her.
Do you think the religiosity end of this kind of started to get stronger in her as her youth faded away, as her younger, more beautiful looks that, you know, were, I mean, she was very beautiful in her younger years. And, you know, as that starts to fade away, that's difficult for a lot of people to deal with. And sometimes they go to different extremes to fill in those blanks, whether it be, you know, plastic surgery or what have you. I'm not saying anything's wrong with trying to keep that, but it seems she went to religion to be just as stunning, at least in her mind. And the two seem to kind of follow a bit of a path. As one side's going down, religiosity is going up. Is that that's a clear correlation there, that
sure
one is filling in the other's blank?
Yeah, sure could be. It's another way to get esteem. What was she calling herself? A translated being or whatever, and turning into a divine goddess. It sure could be that was meeting an emotional need to feel important and to have attention. And if you're not, you know, attracting male attention from strangers in the mall or on the street, well, you'll attract attention from your little group of followers because now you're a translated goddess person.
Exactly. When MILF is no longer your title, it is translated goddess of Rexburg, Idaho.
Exactly.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.